New tools at .RFP Labs.
Just so you know, I have no idea why these guys are up here. They're not a part of anything I'm doing, so just ignore them. I'm expecting some kind of denial of service coming from this side of the table, so. But there's no way, you just can't get rid of attrition. I mean, it's inevitable, so. Anyway, okay, so I'm RFP, and since I guess, introducing myself, since I introduced everyone else today, we'll skip that part. Stop. He's already starting.
What does RFP stand for?
Rainforest Puppy. If you want to know where the name came from, go to my website. It's all there. This microphone is going to be really interesting because normally I tend to do things like this. So if you can't hear me, sorry. What's to talk about today? Breaking the silence, the new toys in the works. Essentially, what the hell have I been up to? I haven't released or done anything cool in quite a while. Unicode doesn't count, but even then, that was back in December. So, you know, everyone's like, I made a post to BugTrack the other day, and I got like a couple dozen emails like, oh, wow, you're alive. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, I guess, you know, unless I'm producing a constant stream of babble or making fun of people, you know, I'm worthless or something. So, updates. For those of you going in your binders saying, wait a minute, these slides aren't in there. Yeah, they're not, because I had to turn in slides like a month or two ago, and there's no way that the content I would do today I would know 2 months ago. So, all the new stuff will be on my website at the URL listed. So you can go there. It'll be a link off the main page. Just, you can go there and grab the new slide with all the fun graphics and all that cool stuff. And if you're really nice, I'll put the original graphics there that aren't cropped. So anyway, they're all happy over here. So yeah, so all the updated material will be available on my website. Okay, so RFP Labs happenings. Just a quick little explanation. This slide, if you haven't gone to the shadow bar here in Caesars, that's what you'll see. That was last night at the whole Black Hat get-together gala. Luckily, I didn't get kicked out for taking pictures. I took quite many. There's a lot to take pictures of. But yeah, so anyway. What the hell have I been doing lately? Nothing, or so it seems. Like I said, my email, am I dead? I got two dozen of them, literally. Some of the stuff I've been trying to do is identify what areas need work, or with this whole web thing or whatnot, there's a lot of problems, a lot of holes as far as coverage and tools, things that aren't being looked for that should be, and just essentially missing. Just missing stuff that I feel like, hey, I wish I had some script for that, or hey, you know, I wish I had some extra whisker function to do that. So I've been trying to go through and say, okay, where are all the gaps? What are we missing? What should I develop? Or what should I at least look at? And in doing that, of course, you know, you define new goals. Of course, there's no point in trying to develop something if you don't know what you're trying to develop for. So I'm like, okay, what the hell am I trying to do? Look for CGIs? Well, I'm going to talk to you about how that's not quite a great goal because that doesn't get anywhere interesting. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, what the hell am I going to do? This Whisker 2.0 thing is supposed to be cool and, you know, the next level, and okay, it's a whole new way of doing stuff, but what's it going to do new? You know, how should it do it? So I've just been basically sitting down racking my brain, and since I gave up coffee, the whole thoughts doesn't come as fast and whatnot. So that's why development's a little slower now. I have less caffeine to work on. And of course, just trying to catch up or keep track on top of all the damn web vulnerabilities. It seems like every week, 4, 5, 10, 500, whatever, CGI problems, web-based problems. I mean, just keeping up with IIS problems alone is tough. Right, Scott? I just saw him walk in, so I had to pick at him. Scott Culp. Oh, there you are. So, you're welcome. Microsoft for you. Yeah, but just trying to keep track of them. I mean, I get emails all the time. When's the new updated ScanDB coming out for Whisker? We need to look for all these problems. I'm about 2,000 problems behind now, literally. It's really tough just to keep track and on top of that stuff. So I've been coming up, again, trying to find new ways, tools, techniques, and goals to make it easy so that if I made a new tool and actually sat down and took the time to update it, I can keep the damn thing updated, or other people could. Because it's a tough thing. And if a tool gets too old and it's missing stuff, then what good is it? You know, and you're just running old crap against your server. Yeah, well, fine. It finds PHF. Great. Well, that's not going to really hurt you. So, and of course, I'm sure by now, if you haven't actually downloaded all the tools and been very aware of what I'm doing, you've probably heard rumors of Whisker 2.0. Maybe it's out, maybe it's not. Depending on what day you asked me in the past, I would have said yes or no. Some funky library things going on with the libwhisker stuff. Don't know how that factors in. There's some proxy thing and whatnot. So there's a couple things. I haven't really done like a really big, hey, okay, public announcement, cool tool available, because they're still in development or whatnot. But there has been some stuff slowly, quietly leaked out, mostly at conferences, Black Hat Asia and CanSec West and a couple other ones and whatnot. I've released a couple small things. But unless you know exactly where my site to go, or you're on some development lists, or you've talked to me personally, you probably didn't even know these tools existed. So, but I'm going to tell you about them today, so don't fear. So, of course, what is the exact problem? I mean, what's the point to all of this anyway? Well, okay, you have this big explosion in the web. Everyone and their mother wants to be on the web, use the web, sell on the web, B2B, P2P, whatever. All those stupid acronyms. L2TP? No, that's wrong protocol. Anyway, so there's a big explosion in just web accessible web technologies, whether it be server side, client side, transactional over it, you know, plugins, this, that, yet another way to design a web page, you know, some XML derivative as if we don't have enough, and all that fun stuff. But of course, HTTP has a lot of glass ceilings, I like to define them. There's a lot of problems when it comes to things like session, doing shopping carts. I mean, the protocol, since it's stateless, doesn't keep state, hence stateless. You have big issues with tracking users or whatnot. That all has to be done pretty much externally to the protocol. You have to do weird add-on session stuff with cookies or tracking or log parsing just to kind of keep track of people. And that's where a lot of problems come with shopping carts. Shopping carts are not like fundamentally easy to do on over HTTP, because every separate web request is unique and different. The web server doesn't know to correlate any two requests unless you have some kind of technology modification to the web server protocol to do it for you. And that causes a lot of problems nowadays, but there's a lot of other stuff too over HTTP. I mean, just by the fact of, mostly stateless. I can't think of any other one right now, but I know they're there. Maybe I'll think of them later and I'll come back to it. But particularly with the stateless problem, since obviously people need shopping carts and they want to do all that cool stuff, you know, sell books with their one-click ordering and all that crap and not make money at it. There's a lot of people making custom code and custom solutions. So, you know, whether it be the Apache code to do sessions, or the PHP code to do sessions, or the actual custom built-in PHP code to do sessions, or, you know, ASP, you know, the whole nine yards. There's so many different ways and places, and people are rolling their own in so many different variations. There's a lot of code out there. There's a lot of code out there. The problem is, I really doubt even 1% of those people are aware of secure coding practices. So now you have issues with all this custom crap. No one knows what's going on. They're just basically shooting for whatever works. And it's all vulnerable to fun things like the SQL tampering and all that great stuff that'll never probably go away. It's all vulnerable, but tools aren't really taking advantage of it. Of course, if it's an evil tool, it'll take advantage of it. There's no way to really scan for that, secure it, check it, or otherwise kind of, there's very little tools right now to help you with all the custom code. So, and some other portions of the problem, kind of offshoot, you don't have tools to actually help with the custom stuff, but we have a big load of tools to do all the other known stuff. I mean, look at how many CGI scanners are actually out there now. And then you have a lot of like one-off scripts that do very specific, small, like exploit type stuff. The Apache long slash URL thing that I rewrote the third version of and posted a bug track a couple weeks ago. Things like that, where like no scanner really implements that. You just have this one script that does that one thing. Then you have this one script that does this other one thing. So you wind up having a toolbox. You know, if look at the Foundstone CD and say, hey, look at our toolbox. And there's like 50, 60 things in there. I don't remember to run 50 or 60 things. Let's consolidate. Let's get to like five. I can keep track of five tools. Unless they're like Nmap and have tons of billions of options, then you can't keep track anyway. You need like man pages to run Nmap. Nmap rocks. You know, I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying there's lots of options in there. It does lots of things. And of course, a lot of the tools lack just fundamental things. I mean, exploits come out. Okay, here's a web exploit. I just coded it for it. Great. I need to run it over SSL. Oh, well, that exploit doesn't do SSL. Okay, I need to run it through a proxy. Oh, that exploit doesn't do proxies either. The fundamental stuff that would just be great if these tools and whatnot just had inherently in it. Now, granted, that's extra code on behalf of the developer, and that's why it's not in there. But they're still needed, and those are really important stuff. So it's really kind of sad to see a tool that does something really good, but it lacks proxy support, so you can't use it in your setting. Then it's like, you know, you're just missing that one piece, and but it's so fundamental. So, literally, let me read this right off verbatim. Of course, we need to have tools that will engage, analyze, and understand kind of the custom and the complex web apps, all that new code. And of course, it'd be great if these tools are cross-platform capable. It's no fun if your tool runs just under Windows, because I know I run Linux. Maybe someone else does too. It's not an all-Windows world, I hope. And of course, easily updatable. This is the problem, like I was saying. I don't have time to sit on top of all these web vulnerabilities that come out every day on BugTrack. So it'd be nice to kind of be able to make it so that anyone can do it or get the pieces in that they need if necessary. And the basic features. I mean, the tool needs to do just the SSL, needs to do proxy. Those are web-related stuff for web-related tools. But I mean, just simple things. It has to make sure all the bases are covered. So, how are we currently tackling that problem? How are we approaching this? Well, CGI scanners. So there's tons of them out there, you know, Whisker being one of them. They're a great standby. The problem with CGI scanners is what they're actually trying to do. CGI scanners check for the existence of a file. They ask the web server, does the file exist, yes or no? And it gets a yes or no answer. Now, when you start having things like Unicode, the Netscape page services bug, those have nothing to do with whether or not a file exists. That is vulnerability checking. That's an entirely different level, because now you have to engage the web server, interpret responses differently than just asking the web server, does it exist? It's not a 404 or 200, and it's not that simple. So a lot of people are trying to modify all these CGI scanners to do vulnerability checking. And a great example is the Unicode. It's very hard to accurately get something like a CGI scanner, like Whisker 1.4 and a lot of the other ones, to actually look for Unicode just by just doing the dot dot, you know, percent 255C, you know, and throwing, or, well, that's the double decode one, all the COAF, you know, hex encoding of all that stuff. They're not going to understand that the difference between, they're not really checking for a file, because they're doing something completely separate. Like you can't check for buffer overflows with a CGI scanner. There's a great example. It's not written, or the technology is not focused on doing that. So a lot of people are trying to do Unicode CGI scanners. It's not the right way. You're going to have false positives, and you're going to have negatives as far as you're going to miss. And it works maybe half the time if you're lucky. I'm shooting for more than half, because, you know, I want to make sure if a server's exploitable, I get wind of it. So. And of course, all the one-off scanners and exploits. There are a lot of people saying, okay, well, let me code this one Unicode scanner the right way. Right, and it'll code their one thing. But that one's missing proxy support and missing SSL, and that's only that one script. Well, great, I have to run that one if I want to do it the right way. But then over here, I've got a different one for the double decode attack, and that does it the right way. And so now I'm back up to a toolbox that has 5 billion of 5 different scripts and tools and whatnot, each doing their one little specialty cool, but they're all kind of doing like web checks. It'd just be great to consolidate all that. And of course, you have the commercial and package security scanners, ISS, CyberCop, Nessus, and whatnot. A lot of those guys do great jobs at checking for both CGIs, and they go the extra length for checking with web vulnerabilities. But the problem with those is that they're not web-centric. I mean, they have other stuff to worry about. The latest RPC worm on Solaris, you know, whatever, FTP vulnerabilities, the whole nine yards. So they've got their hands full trying to update everything and every related vulnerability, and they have other areas, not just web, to focus on. I think web is a great playground, a great exploitable playground. There's a lot of vulnerability there, and I think with a little focus and being a little web-centric, you can take it the extra step and really get into some cool stuff. So that's why I focus specifically in that area. And I'm not saying that the scanners are bad for not doing that. I'm just saying they have more on their plates. They have to do that not only with web, but FTP and RPC and DNS and the whole nine yards. So they've got their hands full, and unless, you know, they're completely have, like, you know, hundreds of people on their dev team and coding signatures left and right and don't sleep and are wired out of their head on coffee, I mean, it's really hard to keep up on that depth or that breadth. So, and of course, there's a couple specialty tools, AppScan, HTTP Push. Those do some of what I'll be talking about. I can't say anything bad about them because they actually do what I'm talking about in some respects. They're a little, again, slightly a little too focused. You need a couple of them to do stuff, but they're definitely in the right direction. They're great tools if you get them to work. That's off the record. Anyway. So there's some out there trying, but it's like I'm not seeing anything that just kind of says, okay, here's your one or two tools. These will do all your special stuff. These focus on the web. These do a good job. Go forth and prosper. So of course, the need for a new approach, Whisker. And when I mention Whisker here, I mean the 1.x, the recent one, or not recent, the 1.4 version. Sure, it's good. It finds lots of web vulnerabilities, especially if you updated your ScanDB yourself. But it's, again, only good for scanning CGIs. Fine. I mean, it's not going to find Unicode. It doesn't look for it, just because it's not a signature for it. But, like, it's not going to find the recent ISS buffer overflow. It never will, unless you really broke Whisker and added some funky code in to do it yourself. But at which point, that's silly, because you're basically just rewriting the tool to do something else. And so I talked about the need for the tool to understand the difference between CGI scanning and vulnerability checking. Very big difference. Buffer overflow is a perfect example. And being able to adapt to custom code configurations and setups. You have a lot of miscoded servers and stuff. Again, it has nothing to do with, does a file exist? Yes, no. It's more like, you know, I was able to get a directory index in that directory when I shouldn't have. There's no file exists type question associated with that. That's very hard to generically scan for. And if you think about it, it's almost, initially I thought it was impossible. I was going to say impossible. It's not, but it's very tough to determine whether you got an index page or directory index. Because you get an HTTP 200, right? The web server says that file exists in both cases. So now it's like, okay, do you make your web server smart enough to be able to read the web page, find certain keywords in any language, right? Not just US, so that causes lots of problems. In any language, and understand, oh, that wasn't really quite a web page. It looks more like a directory index. You can do funky stuff like look for certain icons and stuff shoved in via Apache, but that doesn't help you with ISS and Netscape and, you know, the multitude of other web servers. There's a couple cute little tricks you can do on some of them to help detect, but for having a perfect solution or even just one that hits 90% on just HTTP servers, you can't. You need just a human pair of eyes to understand that was an index, you know, and I shouldn't see that, or that's the actual page I requested and I should see that. So that's what I'm talking about. CGI scanning and vulnerability stuff is just so different. And all these custom setups, I actually thought servers followed RFCs until I wrote Whisker. And as if you follow the progression of Whisker, Whisker 1.0 was very RFC compliant, then it just slowly degraded, right? Catching all the slop as it went by. So 2.0 just says, just starts off with the idea that the server's fucked and takes it from there. So. All right. And of course, and as I was explaining with the whole index of this stuff, in some cases you need a human pair of eyes or a really good neural network to just determine what the hell is being shown to the user. What's this web page? Maybe it's valid. Maybe it has, I mean, it could be a valid web page, but right in the middle could be the dude's SSH password. You know, sure, it shouldn't be there, you know, and it's really stupid. I don't know. Hopefully none of you do that. you shouldn't obviously do that, and that's a vulnerability because you're now exposing the password, but of course the scanner's not going to care nor find it because it doesn't understand that. So that's where having like a user to be able to kind of like interactively use this tool or almost like kind of surf with or go through the tool really helps, because then it's kind of like the tool gives its portion with automation and kind of the repetitive tasks and the reminders and has the information databases and stuff, but you still get the user's aspect or, you know, the auditor's aspect of being able to understand exactly what's going on. Because it's not like you're ever going to have a tool that'll be able to run out to Amazon, find Stephen King's recent bestseller, say, yeah, I want 2 copies, ship one to my grandma and whatever, you know, and throw in the credit card number and the name and all that and then buy the book. It's not going to happen because tools don't understand how to interpret the forms and parse it, where that information goes. It's not like a tool has a spare credit card number laying around. I mean, it's just all that stuff is not going to happen. It may try the basics, but it doesn't understand the process. And when you have like a multi-form process or a really involved application, maybe you're registering for whatever, you know, and you have like 10 pages of questionnaires. The tool can't do that. It won't get beyond the first one, at least not automated. So if you have the human to be able to enter the information as it goes, but the tool to kind of monitor and surf along with, you get an nice hybrid. So my goals after, so you know, those being the problems, I want to have like a small suite of tools, or even preferably one tool, but that's going to be really gross and huge code. So a small suite of tools used for different purposes. Oh, that's descriptive. Used for tackling all these problems I described, as far as used for the very specific web type stuff, as far vulnerability scanning, CGI scanning, and this user interaction and custom application engagement. So the tools definitely have to be aware of what is custom, what's not. If it's an interactive application, particularly one that saves states, there's only so many ways you can save state in the URL, in a cookie, in a form element, whatever. So it should be aware of like all those types of ways and be able to identify, okay, that's probably like the session element. That's how they're saving state. So that means that way of doing it is vulnerable to X, Y, and Z, you know, or this way of doing it is this and that, and if they're doing it this way, they should check for this problem. So it needs to be aware of how things are working like that. And also some of like the custom configurations. Again, I thought, like I said, web servers were RFC compliant. Some servers interact differently. A big one, whoever's running NCSA, sure it's old, but Whisker will not work against it. Why? Because NCSA does this really weird thing when you look, ask for a directory, but no file in the directory. It says the directory doesn't exist. So if I did a request for CGI bin, it says it doesn't exist. But if I do a request for CGI bin PHF, it exists. So, and of course, that breaks Whisker's smart way of scanning by checking for the directory before it actually checks for the files. So, and that was one of the weird things that web servers do. And granted, it's not really in the HTTP spec how to handle that, but I assumed, you know, like everyone acts like ISS since they're the leaders, Microsoft. Now, Apache ISS and some of the big guys do it the same way, but then you get these homebrews I can't remember the name. There's a particular embedded web server. It comes on a chip, and it's stuck in every basically net-enabled appliance. The server banner always comes up the same. Can't believe I'm forgetting it. But that one's always the same, and that thing is so broken. I mean, they were just cutting corners left and right to get it to fit on a chip, I guess. I don't know. But being one of my goals, another one being to bring Whisker up to date. Like I said, the ScanDB is missing thousands of checks, literally, by now. I want to bring it up to date because it'd be nice if you can check for those, too. You know, those are probably the ones worth checking for because they're newer. I mean, everyone knows to turn off PHF, but, you know, what about the latest and greatest? So I was actually hoping to get it all updated. I was thinking, you know, it wouldn't be that hard to update the ScanDB. So then I went to, like, the last 6 months of BugTrack, and I said, oh, screw this. So, a little harder than I thought, it's just so much. And of course, a goal, one of my personal goals, have fun through this all, because God help me, if it gets boring, I'm quitting. So as long as it's fun, you know, and that's what DEF CON's for, I'll keep making these tools and trip over wires over here. So, tools on the drawing board. Three of the ones, and the dot, dot, dot means more, right? I'm not going to tell you about those right now. RF Proxy, LibWhisker, Whisker 2.0. And I'll go on to a little more explanation of each one. So RF Proxy, the RF Proxy logo, kind of cool. RF Proxy, what it is an HTTP proxy capable of basically interacting with the user as they surf. Because it's a proxy, it basically sits in the middle, right? The user makes a request to the proxy makes a request to the web server gives the request back to the proxy or the result, then of course that goes back to the user. So the proxy is in this great position of being this man in the middle, dependent person, where they can just screw with anything they want and get away with it. They can change headers, they can rewrite HTML, they can tweak and twirl and whatever they want to. So, of course, I wrote RF Proxy, or the first attempt at RF Proxy. Ask Andrew Baker. He says the code sucks, and I agree. A little sloppy. I coded it on a plane on the way to a conference. But it's there to show that this tool could hopefully be useful. And it allows, like I said, HTML rewriting, request replay, a lot of the automated stuff being in the middle. It can do a lot of logging things to a database for later correlation, because maybe you want to see how well they're doing tracking session or generating random session IDs. So you can tell the proxy, okay, watch how I do this one request. And you make the request, and you say, okay, make 100,000 more just like it and grab the session portion of it and just take that one piece and put them in a file and let's analyze how variable or how random they actually are. So, and the proxy being in the middle can do that because it watches you the first time and then just kind of emulates you and it gets the repetitive and the automated portion of it to do interesting fun stuff like that. And of course, since it's in the middle, it can actively or passively monitor, exploit, change, modify, whatever it wants to do, all the web traffic. And the greatest example, of course, is HTML rewriting. A lot of people are dependent on like form inputs. They actually think form inputs are hidden when they say type equals hidden. Well, the proxy says, screw that, type equals show me, you know, whatever. And so it removes it. So that way, you can use your normal web browser, you know, and surf around, and even if the website tries to do like JavaScript protection and max size on the form elements and all that crap, the proxy remove all of it so you can still exploit away without having to worry about anything trying to stop you, because we don't want to be stopped. Us hackers are fun like that. So where it's at, the preview release 1, PR1, was released in March. It was released at CanSec West. Basic framework and functionality implemented, like I said, very sloppy, very icky code. All right, that's my buzz phrase for that. What I wanted to do is basically say, okay, here's this idea I have, and I figured you guys wouldn't understand or kind of see where I'm coming from if I didn't try to implement it in some way, shape, or form. So I took a really bad crack at it, but I at least got something that worked amazingly most of the time. And so I was like, okay, this is what I'm trying to do. So my thought was, of course, okay, what do you think, community? Does it suck? Is this useful? Should I go forth on this? Should I not? And that's where I left the question. I wasn't sure whether or not I was going to do that, because at the same time, HTTP Push was released, and I believe there's another one that was recently released in March as well. And it's like all of a sudden there was 3 out of nowhere. You know, I'm like, oh damn, these guys are doing it too. So I was like, well, if there's a rock, you know, I know mine sucks because I coded it. You know, it's all scrappy. So it's like, all right, I'm not sure if I was going to go forth with that or not. Well, of course, so where's it going? It does have a future. I will go forth with it. After looking at the other stuff, I decided, well, it's still probably best to develop our proxy. I want to port it to use LibWhisker, which I'll talk about in just a second, for most of its functionality. The reason why it initially wasn't was it was a kind of a conundrum, because I wanted to release RF Proxy before I released LibWhisker. But if I wrote RF Proxy to be on LibWhisker, then you'd have an app that didn't have the library released yet. So that didn't make much sense. So I coded it without the library, and now I have to go back and re-clean up the code and build it on the library. And of course, you know, I had this nifty idea. I get all kinds of emails every once in a while from, you know, kids or whatnot saying, Whisker would be cool if it had a GUI. I'm like, like, all right, you know, obviously you're not the command line switch type. So I'm like, okay, what can I do with this GUI thing? You know, it's the way. If I'm going to commercialize IPO and make millions off this eventually, you know, I need to have a GUI in here. That and, you know, and some other stuff. But so I'm like, okay. I was thinking, all right, well, the proxy is kind of sitting in the middle, and, you know, it's all web, and they already have their web browser open. What about just a CGI web interface? If you look at Whisker 1.4, if some people know this, most don't. You can take Whisker 1.4, throw it in your CGI bin, request it through the web server, and it actually goes into CGI mode and gives you the HTML form. So you can actually run Whisker straight through your CGI bin as a CGI. So you web-enable Whisker and to run it off. And RF proxy will actually run it, Whisker, that same way. But I was thinking, okay, well, why don't I just do that with all the tools? You know, why not? Just kind of interface them all through this RF proxy, which, again, it's in the middle. It has the web stuff. It's in a great position. Why not? So I think that's where it's going. That's where it's slated to design. LibWhisker and the yet unreleased LibWhisker logo. Very minimal. I'm into graphics, by the way, in case you don't know. LibWhisker is a library for programmers and tool designers, hence Lib and LibWhisker, you know, that whole Unix approach. It implements various HTTP and web-related type functionality, and preferably to speed up tools, like any library. Get all the weird or hard or whatever crap, you know, in the library and out of the way, and just give me a couple API and I'll just use those and not know or care what's under the hood. So LibWhisker is completely like all the basic web stuff. Again, all that proxy support, all that SSL support, just doing the damn web request on its own, you know. Have to start from scratch somewhere. So the goal was to have LibWhisker do as much as possible, all that, so people can stop spending time worrying about how do I make the web request? Oh, do I really have to put SOX support in that? And oh, I got to code in proxy support now. It's like, screw that. Don't worry about it. Just focus on the cool stuff, you know. Just go to the exploit. Don't worry about the transport and all that. You know, the library will take care of it. So that was the goal. And part of the reason, actually, for me doing the library like that was because I was looking around at some of the exploits coming out, the Perl ones, because Perl rocks, as I said in there. It's a Perl module. And people were actually ripping the SendRaw function out of Whisker and out of the RDS exploit. And that's such bad code. So I'm like, okay, if you're going to rip my code and reuse it, let me code it right, you know, so when it's plastered all over everything, it's at least okay. So I was like, all right, well, I'll do this library thing. That way, whoever wants to rip the code can instead just use the library and use the code in there, and it'll be much cleaner and work and have all the cool stuff. So, but it is a Perl module, so all you C programmers will have to embed Perl in your applications now, and your TCL and stuff will have to spawn out to a shell and run Perl. Anyway, and so, yeah, like the idea is like a library. I mentioned that. I'm getting ahead of myself, so let's move on. Where it's at, PR 3, Preview Release 3, Public Release 3, whatever you want to make PR stand for, was made available in late June. This was at Black Hat Asia, Singapore, and Hong Kong. And so it's essentially the full feature library components and all the functionality to do the basic web stuff. It actually works. It's solid. It's stable, believe it or not. I was surprised. With SSL support, and I actually have SSL support running on Unix and Windows, which is kind of like, ooh, first. And Perl, so it's like, wow, you know, SSL and Perl on Windows is like, yeah, right. And that was my first thought. But it is working and it is solid, and it uses a couple of the available SSL libraries, so, you know, you just kind of use whatever you have laying around. You don't have to, like most Perl programs, it's like, okay, you want to use this, you got to run a CPAN, download these six Perl modules, make sure you get URI and HTTP and get this SSL thing and go over there and grab that module and this module. It's like, screw that. I want to just, that's the whole point of LibWhisker, get all the functionality in one library. And if you want SSL, you'll need a second one. But all you need then is two libraries, and that's it. You don't have to run around and grab all these extra libraries and APIs and all this stuff to get a program to work. I won't mention names, but a lot of apps, some I've mentioned already, are like that. Of course, right now, or at least as far as I've seen very little use by the community. I was chatting with someone stopped me in the hall, actually, and said, okay, so I was using LibWhisker. I was like, great, you're person number three to actually use the damn thing, not counting me, of course. So it's like, yeah, so we're up to three developers strong and growing, slowly but steadily. I expect like a dozen by the end of the year, yeah. But hopefully, as it matures or whatnot, a lot of people start using it. H.D. Moore actually brought up a great example. I'm still calling it preview release, and I still basically carry a big banner that says, this code is going to change, it sucks, be careful, and don't depend on it. You know, the standard disclaimers most free software has. And since it's not an official release, it's not a 1.0, okay, this is stable, this isn't going to change, maybe some people are scared. So I'm going to change the numbers around, put a 1.0, and then hopefully people won't be scared and we'll start using it. So maybe I'll get up to 5 developers by next week or something, we'll see. But a lot of the really cool stuff is in the unreleased alpha stage. That essentially means it's in my private stash. I haven't made it public yet. The anti-IDS stuff, there's a lot of more cool new things. I haven't actually tested them as far as to actually see specifically which IDSs are vulnerable to what, but there's like a dozen new anti-IDS tactics that are going to be rolled out soon. And then fun things like NTLM authentication, MD5 digest authentication, front page client emulation support, being able to say, hey, that web server has a front page web on it. Let me just start brute forcing the auth. Let's see if I can upload and download with author permission and change files, get directory indexes that way. Because like if you're using things like WebDAV and stuff, this is where CGI scanners and vulnerability checkers differ. If WebDAV or front page is open, why scan for CGIs? Use the WebDAV or front page, you just download your index. Just straight request, hey, give me all the files in that directory. Give me all the files in all your directories. Get the list and then just parse through that. There's no point in scanning. It's a lot more efficient. So it's the approach and how the tool works. So that's the type of thing that I definitely want to do. And some of that stuff is in LibWhisker. And of course, again, like in any library, just attempting to get the standard fundamental hurdles out of the way, all the proxy support, the virtual host support, the HTTP 1.1 keep alive support to do multiple requests over one socket and things like that. So where's it going? As far as I can take it. Hopefully this is some of my best code to date. Like, I hope I get an award or something for it, Nobel or I don't know. It's really good code. I'm liking it. I'm having fun. And I really hope to really make this something that's stable, good, and it's just out there for everyone. Whoever wants to use it can use it, and hopefully they will. I really hope that a lot more people start to use it and give me feedback, because otherwise I'm just basically coding for myself, and I know my needs and I get my shit to work, but I don't know anything about anyone else. So I'm hoping, contribution, whether it be code patches and stuff like that, feedback, just tell me things that are broken helps, because I might not have found it. I was like, this doesn't work on Mac OS. Besides me asking, why are you running Mac OS? Then I'll ask, okay, well, what exactly? All right, I understand why now. So things like that really help. You'd be surprised. So send me email and help. So the book of Whisker 2.0, will actually be in LibWhisker. That was the whole point of it, too. Get all the fundamentals out of the way and get all that features. And then Whisker is just basically kind of going to be an example of how to use all the functionality for the most part. So it'll be nifty like that. I want to move rapidly to the 1.0 release so that people actually will use the damn thing and not say, oh, but it's beta. I can't use it yet. I got to wait till it's like actual official. So as soon as I dub it official, hopefully people will use it. And there's this cool, I've yet to release it, but it's a nifty part of it. This LWBIN, LibWhisker, it's the binary version of LibWhisker. I rewrote some of the functions in C, because there's a lot of people like, oh, well, that would be great if it was in C, but it sucks in Perl. Fine, I broke down, I wrote XS wrappers, took some C code, and you can still call it from Perl. The reason for doing it is that shit's a lot faster in C, let me tell you, than in Perl. There is, for instance, the HTML parser runs 4 times faster. So rather than taking like a minute, it takes 15 seconds. You can't beat that. And a bunch of other really, really big analytical tasks, particularly when you just got to run through a lot of memory, sees direction, you know, memory addressing is great for that. Perl, what, you split it into an array and then address each element, it doesn't quite work all that great. So, so there's a binary module, a lot cool functions, implemented in C, a lot faster, all nifty. And you don't have to have it to run libwhisker. Libwhisker will sense whether or not LWBin is installed. If it is, it'll use the faster functions, and if not, it has the default Perl ones to fall back on. So it's one of those, again, I don't want to do this whole thing where you have to have this module and go down this one and go down that one. Libwhisker will actually work even if you don't have socket support. Any socket API or any socket functions will error out and say, you don't have sockets, I can't do that. But you can still use some of the general API. So there's actually zero dependencies that you have to get Libwhisker to work, which is totally bonus because I'm tired of installing all this crap on all my machines for all the dependencies. And a lot of the other applications. And not all of them are default install or default included with Perl. Socket is, hopefully. You know, it's something I trust on, but I did make it so it works without. So for those of you who aren't aware of Libwhisker, kind of a peek in exactly what does it do, of course, it handles all the HTTP stuff. So the request to the server and parsing the response and all the headers and getting into a nice format that's consistent so that apps can use it. It actually can do the 0.9, the 1.0, and 1.1 connections. Everyone does 1.0. Let's make a request, get the response, shut down the socket, you're done. And then, you know, open a new socket and repeat. The 1.1 is cool because you just stream multiple requests over the same one open socket. And that's kind of nifty because let's say you're doing so much, you know, generic IDS, I won't name names, and you think you can do like a shortcut where you just basically look for the URL in the first 300 bytes of the packet. You know, and once you see the server response, like, okay, no more, and you just kind of ignore the rest of the connection, well, you can start whipping out more requests after that. And, of course, it's a little more efficient because you're not ripping up and tearing down sockets. You're not doing more SYNAC and all the other fun TCP overhead. So it's definitely fun like that, and that has some really interesting properties in and of itself that just kind of evolved from it. But Whisker will actually handle that transparently. And the 0.9 stuff is another fun way to kind of screw with IDS. It won't get past most of them, but it'll definitely confuse them because the HTTP syntax isn't quite the same with a 0.9 request. You basically just say get in the file name and end it, and then you just get this result. There's no headers, and you know half the request part is missing and stuff. So, yeah, the library handles all that. And I talked about the keep alive connection reuse. One of the cool things in PR4 that's coming out is that it'll actually keep multiple hosts and concurrent connections open. Right now, PR3 and below, you can keep a connection open to one host, but as soon as you change hosts, it'll close that connection and make a new one. It doesn't keep them open. In PR4, which will essentially be out pretty soon now, and after, they do multiple hosts with multiple open connections at a time. So you can really just do some crazy, wacky stuff and spam the internet if you wanted to with all this. Receive chunk encoding. This is one of the fun ones. This is a big problem when you start getting into XML, web dev, and things like that. The web servers spew out the data in really funky encodings, and chunked is one of these weird ones. It's in the RFC spec. To understand and read the actual source, it's fine if you're looking at headers, but not if you're actually worrying about what's the data in the web page, and you're doing multiple connections, so you have to be aware of when you stop reading and when you can start making more requests. You have to know how to handle this chunked encoding, and I haven't seen an exploit to date that cares, probably even knows what the hell chunked is. So the library handles that, and that's the point of the library. I'll get all that crap done and working. You don't care. You know, you write your exploit on top of this, you have all that taken care of. You know, you just go exploit and don't think about anything else. Sounds like most script kiddies. Anyway, and it has integrated proxy and virtual host support. All that crap's taken care of. You know, it's fundamental stuff that's needed, and it does it automatically. You don't have to tell Libwhisker what you want virtual host, you want all that cool stuff. You just kind of say, hey, just that host, go request, it'll figure out if it's virtual or not, and it'll go after it. And complete cross-platform timeout support. This was an issue with Whisker 1.4. If you ran it on Windows and it hung, it hung. It just basically sat there until you aborted the scan. So because I didn't have Unix signals in Perl on Windows, but I figured out how to do it the right way. You know, I'm not naive anymore. I read the book on Perl, and actually wrote good code, so now it actually works on Windows. So Windows users will actually be able to use this efficiently. So more stuff in it. Native SSL support, no external hacks. My official response for getting Whisker 1.4 to work over SSL was use like SSL proxy or SSL connect, one of those fake cheesy proxy type things that basically take a clear text connection and just wrap it over SSL and redo the connection. So the library handles it itself. It does it via NetSSL, which is part of the Crypt SSLA or the NetSSLA. And that's actually going to change to the NetOpenSSL library probably pretty soon now. So it'll support whichever ones are out there. And since Windows supports Crypt SSLA, which would be the NetSSL library, Windows has the support, which I was really surprised about. And of course, my whole design philosophy around this was no rules. If I code an exploit, by nature, exploits do weird stuff. They're usually breaking some rule or expectation or assumption. They're doing something funky. So you can't, or a lot of times it's really hard to code exploits using standard libraries and standard modules, because most libraries, you know, benign general common libraries, are coded to the aspect that you want the shit to work, which is not what we want. LibWhisker will let you break the rules. You don't have to always end your request with like a certain, you know, carriage return line feed. You don't have to have the HTTP header. You can skip all headers. You can list headers 3 times. You can tab, indent, change everything around. Every single aspect of the request is under complete control of the program. So no rules are imposed. If you need to do something weird, hopefully LibWhisker will let you do that weirdness. And if it doesn't, let me know, because that's a real big selling point. No rules at all. You can't use libwww and allow the common Perl stuff. It won't let you do some of the fun things that you need to do when playing around with web security. And of course, for the Perl mongers in the room, it's all controlled by a single hash structure, so it's real easy to throw around and toss around and basically code for. It's all transparent data handling, put, post, and all the other fun stuff. You tell it the method, it'll figure out who has to send data where and stuff. You tell it what data you want to send, it handles all the calculations of everything, it sends it off. And HTTP 100 continue responses. This is something really weird that kind of comes with the web dev territory, where basically a server says, you know, you give a request. Normally in HTTP, you give a request, you get a response, cool. And these 100, you basically, the server says, okay, here's my first response, but hang on, I'll come back to you and give you a second response in a minute. Let me process some. Then maybe we'll come back and, okay, I'm still working, hang on a second. So as long as it keeps spitting 100 continue, you have to keep reading the headers until you finally get the real response, which would be something in, you know, above 100. So library handles all that. It'll sit and wait around until you get the real response, versus most web scanner applications, which will stop as soon as they get the first 100, say, 100's not 200, so that means that file doesn't exist. Okay, you're not vulnerable, move along. So that's obviously not the right answer. This is boring code stuff, so I'll throw more naked pictures up to interest you guys and wake you up. It's getting there. Other cool stuff that LibWhisker does, auth, you know, basic MD5 NTLM. There's all the stars are the crap that is in really, really, really alpha you're not going to see, because I'm still working on it. Trying to find how to do MD5 and NTLM and work it into the structure of LibWhisker and how it does things is kind of tricky, because auth is fine. It's just one header, you throw it up, you're done. What is that squeaking? That is really loud. Anyway, MD5 and NTLM are kind of tricky, just because they require two requests. You have to get the challenge and then give the response, and that kind of like is not right. it's kind of tricky to work around. So I'm trying to find a nice way to wrap it in, still have no rules, and otherwise do cool stuff. But I'm working on it. Brute URL, brute forcing support, usernames, passwords, URLs, whatever you want to do. The HTML tag parsing routines, you actually see some of that already in RF proxy, because it reads and rewrites the HTML pages. So to do that, it has to actually read HTML and understand HTML. It has to parse the tags. So I wrote the HTML tag parser. And it's also an LWB, and it has a faster version, 4 times faster. So so there's an actual full tag parser, and you can rewrite, read, change, whatever you want to do. It understands HTML. And it's only like in 15 lines. That was quite cool. Really small versus, you know, like, okay, Conqueror, which has like, you know, 5 pages of C code to do it. It's like, Perl, 5 lines, you know. Bonus of Perl. Encode module just does the various encoding things. Hex is kind of a dumb one. You have to do it for web, but like Unicode, there'll be full Unicode support. Not just the 2-byte Unicode, but it'll do any overlong you want. You can say, okay, give me a 20-byte long Unicode, you know, representation of this character. You know, there it goes. Or give me a random one between 2 and 5 bytes long, every character different, you know, and it'll whip it out for you. So, yeah, just all the various different ways to munge, mangle, and play, you know, with the canonical names of file web names. The crawl one, another important one, it'll actually go through your website, find where the crap is, where it's at. Basically, it's the HTML parser that finds the links and then goes and requests those links and finds those links and just keeps going. And it kind of keeps track of stuff in the process so that you can kind of literally crawl a website. And there's reasons for that, which I'll get to. Web dev support, kind of making life a little bit easier to do web dev requests, not much there. Front page support, being able to play around with front page webs because they're kind of coming common. And it's always fun to do anyway. And of course the anti-IDS routines I mentioned, there are new stuff, I still got to test them. So, just checking my time here. So, Whisker. That's the Whisker logo, the Whisker 2.0 logo. It's kind of like some weird bullhead thing, I guess. Okay, what it is, CGI scanner. For those of you really not aware of 1.4, why not? It's a cool program. No. Just a basic CGI scanner like any other one. Just some interesting features that are slightly different that make it somewhat unique. And there's pros and cons to that, but still, why not? Written in Perl, cross-platform, yada yada. Does other various stuff, brute forcing logins, URLs, the anti-IDS features, which a lot of people seem to like, although hopefully every IDS is now immune to the way Whisker does its stuff because it's been out so long. Granted, there's a couple people who didn't get on the boat until very, very, very recently with the whole anti-IDS thing. I won't name names, but it's a 3-letter vendor. And the last two are SS. So, Whisker 2.0, where it's at? And of course, I always get the question, where is it? Well, obviously it's not out yet. I'll get to that. But of course, the plan at one point was to only have libwhisker and basically code all your scan logic straight in Perl. I thought it was a good idea. A couple of people thought it was a good idea. Then I got a lot of people like, oh, but, you know, I'm a script kid. I just want to update and crack crap, you know? I mean, I can't code Perl. So I was like, oh, well, maybe do I accommodate you or do I give you the finger? I don't know. But my thought was, okay, fine, well, then what I'll do is I'll include an example script that actually implements the functionality, you know, to use the library so that coders, you know, programmers can see how to use a library. The kiddies will still have some kind of tool, you know, that will still be runnable, and everyone will hopefully be happy, and everyone's web server will still be broken. So... But of course, and that's where it was at, where it's going. Well, I separated from libwhisker because, you know, if you asked me a little bit ago, Whisker 2.0 was libwhisker. And then I'm sitting around like, that was a really stupid idea. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute, let me redo this. You know, take two, libwhisker is separate from Whisker 2.0. It'll be a standalone tool, just like Whisker 1.4 is, completely independent. It'll be built on libwhisker. You'll need to go and get the libwhisker library, and you can transparently change and do whatever you want the libwhisker library, and Whisker will use it. But they are going to be independent. And of course, the problem is Whisker still depends on libwhisker to do its functionality. So I got to get the rest of the crap in libwhisker handled and figured out before, obviously, you can build Whisker on it. So that's kind of what the holdup is. And the coding has begun. Dun, 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 dun. So there's work going on already. Me and my great crack team of developers, you know, over at RFP Labs. Yeah, right. So the sneak peek, what will be in Whisker 2.0? It still does all the normal scanning stuff. You know, the file existence, yes, no, whatever. It finds files. That's great. But one of the fun things it'll do is it'll actually crawl your site. I mentioned crawling. It'll crawl your site and find things like where your custom applications are lying. If you renamed programs, what are you actually using in CGI context, passing parameters to? It'll find out if you renamed your CGI bin. Maybe you put all your CGIs in CGI you know, puffy or something. You know, it'll go and find those if it sees you're using that. And it'll say, okay, well, let me rescan for all that crap over in this directory, and maybe it'll find some stuff. So it'll actually adapt the tool more to your site layout and find things just by crawling through. So you can do that prior to doing your CGI scan. It'll find your directories, find all your apps, and find all that crap, and then set up Whisker to also scan those directories as well. So slightly more adaptive. And of course, it has cleaner, more verbose reporting as far as, like, you know, maybe something you can actually show to someone non-technical. I mean, Whisker reporting right now is a plus 200. It exists. And that's about it. So a little more info on that would be nice, and it will have that. And of course, the CVE and bug check ID links, the IDs and stuff will be embedded in there. Actually having descriptions of what the vulnerability is, descriptions on how to exploit it, you know, and all that fun stuff. It'll be aware of all the nuances of each server. You know, the more I play and find broken things of each web server, the more I can code around them. So this, of course, will be, you know, figure out, okay, that's Apache, this version. I know that one version has this stupid way of doing this. So it'll work around it. And of course, saving scan results to some kind of database-ish format where you can essentially start correlating stuff. I mean, if I scanned, let's say there's a cluster of web servers and the admins keep doing the same thing. If I make two scans, I see some stuff. I can say, okay, Whisker, go get the data from that scan, parse out the directories, and apply those to this scan of this separate host. So you can kind of start doing multiple hosts. It's multiple host aware, essentially, is what it comes down to, and kind of keeping track of things in that format. Plus, it's also cool, too, where if you do the whole credo of don't do anything twice, once you Whisker a site and you stash it in your local cache, your local database, if you ever go to Whisker it again, I'll say, wait, stop, you already did it. Don't do it twice. You'll get caught. You know, and then you just see the old results. So, yeah, because if you do it once, it might be an accident. Do it twice, you're probably doing something bad. So the roadmap. What happened when? CanSec West, that was in March. I released RF Proxy. The future was uncertain, as I said. And Black Hat Asia, I released LibWhisker. And that's when I actually said LibWhisker is Whisker 2.0. And then recently I said, okay, LibWhisker is not Whisker 2.0. So that's why you have this whole confusing roadmap thing. This is one of the few slides that actually made it into the thing. Whisker 1.4 entered the chaos. You know, and then you had RF Proxy came out and shot one way fine. And then you had Whisker 2.0, you know, that came out. And then all of a sudden I changed complete directions. I'm like, okay, that's a LibWhisker. That's a little different. And, you know, who's going where and whatnot. Wow, it looks like how I drive. Anyway. So what is it now? All right, I finally figured out what the hell I'm doing. So it's finalized. Everything's moving towards an RF Proxy 1.0. Everything's moving towards LibWhisker 1.0. And, of course, there's going to be Whisker 2.0. Those are final, and that's how it's going to be. Three independent products. God, I'm sounding like a vendor every day. Three independent tools. Three independent tools and whatnot. Development on each. And that's final, damn it. Other stuff. Well, it's not just tools, not just code. You know, there's a lot of other fun things I've been working on. And they kind of relate. So the W3VR, this is a fun one. I pronounce it Weaver. It's my little cute pet name for it. Code name Weaver. Yeah. Stands for WWW, or World Wide Web Vulnerability Repository. Essentially a website dedicated to tracking web exploits, CGIs, web server problems, you name it. Anything over HTTP should be on this damn thing. Database interface analysis. Basically, for those of you who are familiar with whitehats.com, imagine that, and imagine that web-centric and probably doled out, like, info-wise, a lot more to include how to exploit it, where to get fixes, what the actual vulnerability is, and have things being able, from that, being able to generate Whisker rules, Nessus plugins, Snort signatures, you know, the whole nine yards. Because if you think about it, generically, scanning for CGI is yet another vulnerable CGI. It's a file name, and it's really simple. And it's like, okay, I just basically do a request for the file name. Does it exist? Yes, no, done. There's about 3,000 of those out, you know, and each one has to have individual information, but how you technologically scan for those are pretty cut and dry. So, you know, it's just a site where you can generically generate a lot of information off of just having the one damn file name. So That's a lot of what this site is about, just to kind of keep tabs and hopefully keep on top of all of the web vulnerabilities coming out at an accelerated rate. And when it's open, public, and on the web, and kind of like an interface database thing, that lets multiple people do it. So, you know, for those of you who write the email saying, why the hell wasn't it updated, and me, you know, writing back saying, because you didn't send me anything, this will kind of distribute the load so I'm not the bottleneck, because I only have so many, you know, so much time and whatnot. So I'm really hoping some people will contribute. And that way this whole thing will stay updated for everyone, for Nessus, for Whisker, for Snort, for whatever free software that wants to use it. So I'm not generating any vendor plugins or anything, sorry. And specifically, Weaver and Whisker, how do those two interoperate? It gives a single place to download all the current rules, but also, just like whitehats.com, custom rules. You can say, okay, well, I only run NT web servers. I don't care about all those damn Unix checks. You know, those guys are silly anyway. Give me all the NT checks only. So we'll say, all right, well, here, you know, and it generates a custom scan DB, and then you go ahead and just download that, and you run off that, and there you go. There's your checks. You know, and if you really want to be current, you just download the latest version of the scan DB seconds before you actually run the scan. Whisker 2 actually has a switch. Download before, you know, and verify. Download and verify. But download right before you run it, and it actually can check for updated components, too. So Whisker 2 will say, hey, you know, okay, you just ran this, but do you want me to check to the, you know, the Weaver site and see if there's an updated libwhisker version or updated whisker version or maybe an updated scan DB? Because that might help you out. Then you just say yes, no, or whatever. So hopefully getting it all web-centric and stuff, that allows Whisker, being a web tool, to kind of self-update. It won't be automatic. We're not going to pull any, like, Microsoft stuff or anything here. You know, no weird protocol crap going on. Okay, I'm picking on Microsoft too much. Scott's giving me the evil eye. But hopefully it'll help just make life easier rather than say, okay, well, maybe there's a new version out. Let me go grab the tarball. What was the site name? You know, surf around trying to find it. The tool itself can do it all, so it'll help you out. And, of course, the Whisker reports. The reporter will be nice because we can stash all kinds of information on the site and update it and generate nice, cool, like, big technological blocks of information, or have, like, the multiple technical person and CIO level type of, you know, descriptions. And then, you know, Whisker will say, okay, you know, let's generate a report. Who's this for, whatever, all right. And then it runs to the website and grabs the pieces that you need, plops them in a report, and says, okay, here's your generated report. You know, I'll include the fundamental basic information with the Whisker itself, but, I mean, a lot of that information, that's a database app. And when you start talking, there's 3,000 vulnerabilities we're tracking, sending down like databases of all the information for all 3,000, particularly when it kind of changes and morphs a little here and there, I don't want to do. So it'll be stashed on the site, and the tool can actually run and get it when needed and use that to compose reports, which allows us to keep things a little more accurate and up to date, of course. So we now move on to another fun topic, and this will be controversial. VulnWatch. VulnWatch, yet another, but this one's better. Community-centric disclosure list, a la BugTrack, AntiBugTrack, Win2KSec. So yes, there's another disclosure list starting, another email disclosure list. Some of the things that are different with this one, multiple moderators and multiple time zones. The goal is to get the stuff out fast. As soon as someone's awake and reads the damn email, it'll go out. And of course, what's cool, there's a lot of reasons cool about that. I'll get to it in a second. And it's a cooperative community effort. No financial undertides. I'm not implying anything there at all. I know some people read into that, but basically I'm just saying is that it's completely a community-owned thing. There's no company doing anything whatever. And of course, the website is VulnWatch.org. I'm actually going to call up Steve Manswick. He's the founder of VulnWatch. Steve Manswick, myself, Weld Pond are going to start off as the first moderators of VulnWatch. But I want him to just kind of explain really quickly, like 5 minutes, kind of go into the little more specifics of what VulnWatch is going to be, since it's going to be the next cool elite email list. So,
go for it. Thanks. Okay, first I got to thank RFP and Weld Pond. This idea has kind of been a year, almost, actually it's been almost a year in the making. We've talked about it before. We've thought about before, and finally we managed to get it off the ground. Some of you know I do moderate the Win2K Sec Advice mailing list, which is also an open disclosure list for Microsoft issues. This list is going to be different because it's not Microsoft issues. We're covering everything but Microsoft issues. The two mailing lists are separate. excuse me. Win2K Sec Advice is owned and paid for by Windows 2000 Magazine. I still moderate it. I start the list. I moderate it. That's all cool. Fallen Watch is staying completely independent. It's done completely by donation, completely by community support. We've already had co-location facilities donated. We've had some hardware donated. The box went live today, so we're pretty, you know, pumped about that one. Basically, it's vulnerability announcement list. You're not going to see a lot of the discussion. So if you guys are, you know, if you guys want the discussion lists, those are there. They already exist. There's some pretty good ones out there to, you know, stay with. We're not going to do the patch announcement thing. We're vulnerability announcement and exploit announcement only. An issue I've always had is, you know, some new Linux vulnerability will come out, and then you'll see, you know, 10 different posts to, you know, say BugTrack. You'll see 10 different posts from all the different vendors saying, we fixed it, here's the patch. All of us should know by now to monitor our own vendors and monitor our own patches. So that's not the whole point of this list. That's pretty much it, I guess. Yeah. I think we covered it all. So, thanks.
So yet another, but a slightly different take on it all. The patch watch thing is a really big key point, because I know I'm tired of seeing, yet another Linux vulnerability. It's like, oh God, I'm going to get spammed by all the Linux vendors now. You know, new RPMs, new devs for everything, you know, by everyone. And since, you know, there's even like, there's so many Linux distributions, like little Timmy Linux and, you know, and everything else. It's just, it's getting crazy. So give me. You want the stuff. When can I play? RFProxy PR1 and LibWhisker PR3 are available now. You can get them from my website. You might have to search a while, but they're on there. I'll actually bring them more to the forefront so people can download them. I realized the other day when someone was like, oh, I want RFProxy. And I'm like, oh, get it from my site. He's like, I'm at your site. I can't find it. I'm like, it's right. Oh, it's not there, is it? And I'm like, where did I put that damn thing? And I'm surfing around trying to find it. I'm like, after like a half hour, I just went to the file system and, you know, grepped for it. I'm like, where the damn thing? Where did I put the thing? So, yeah, but I'll move them out, and they're available for my website. LibWhisker 1.0, the official release, and Whisker 2.0. Everyone keeps asking, when's it going to be out? My goal is July 31st, end of this month. I was really hoping to have the code available for here, but, you know, I was like, do I code or do I go out drinking and having fun? You know, it's like, big decision. Guess which one won. So, yeah, so the code's coming. It's very narrowly complete, but I didn't want to release more broken, crappy code because it'll start to look like SourceForge. So I wanted to hold off on that. I'm kidding. Hey, my crap is on SourceForge, but that's actually a quote I got from someone else, believe it or not. SourceForge, the biggest repository of non-working crap. So I don't know who credited it, but it definitely wasn't me. And of course, Weaver. The W3VR project, that's the interactive website for all the web stuff. I'm waiting on a server transplant for that. That's basically when I get off my lazy ass and drive the server down to Kentucky, where it belongs. So hopefully, again, that'll be done by July 31st, too, and that site will go live. And there's two other projects, which I'm not really going to talk about today, that'll be going live with it. That'll probably make bigger waves than this. But yeah, so Wiretrip's in transition, my website, and a lot of stuff is hinging on getting on the new damn server and my own database and getting secure and all that stuff. Once that's up, fun things will be abound. And VulnWatch, I put going online soon, maybe next week, but as Steve said, it's live today. Is the subscription sign up live?
Yeah, that's all there.
I think you can send what?
Right now it's only by email. We are working on doing a web form for it. That's not up yet, but it is by email. If you go off to the site, the FAQ is there and how do you subscribe and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So if you go to VulnWatch.org, you'll find all the information, what it's about, more detailed information that we didn't talk about, and how to subscribe, what email addresses, and all that fun stuff. And eventually that'll have archives and like commentary, like message boards based on the posts I came across and things like that. So How can I participate? This is one I hope, please help me. Help me, please. Not, I mean, with LibWhisker, not mentally. I need help. That sounded good. Quote me on that one. I need help. If you're interested in keeping track or what's going on with LibWhisker, Whisker, some RF proxy, whatever, I do have a mail list up at that wonderful SourceForge site. You can subscribe to the Whisker Develop mailing list. Go to the SourceForge URL listed there to get the sign-up page and, you know, the bug track or the bug monitor page and all the other fun stuff. But you can sign up via that. And, yeah, wake up, so it's over. I think I'm running a little early. Ooh, yeah, 20 minutes. But, okay, so questions. Maybe you'll have some, or is this going to be like my inbox where I just get like, help me hack, you know, thing. Oh boy, it's like, then where do I start on that one?